Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your Bermuda Championship recap episode. And joining me to break it all down, it's Greg Ducharme. What up, Greg?
Rick, thanks for joining me today. I can see you're playing your best Kyle Porter act. Where are you today?
That's right. Channeling my inner KP, trying to show up in a different backdrop every single time. I've been in hotels a lot recently. I am at my parents' house, which is always a great time. We're showing our home today, so had to get out for a couple hours. Luckily, my parents don't live too far. I was able to shoot over here and get an opportunity to chat with you, because I wouldn't miss this for the world, Greg.
Right. Of course not. It's a Bermuda Championship. But Rick, I'm thinking every single time that you're somewhere else, I know you're home shopping. I'm thinking, man, Rick is really moving up in the world. And here we are at your parents' house.
At least I'm out of the basement. That's true. Just a spare bedroom. So I'm doing okay. You know who else is doing okay? Brian Gay. Because he is your champion of the Bermuda Championship. We're going to talk all about the implications of him being 48 years old, his fifth PGA Tour victory, which ties him with Ricky Fowler. But Greg, your initial reactions to Brian Gay winning a golf tournament on the PGA Tour?
Man, there's so many things to get into here, but I look at that round 64 on Sunday, specifically 31 on the second nine with a bogey at 17, which was a 3-putt. The guy just putts so well. And so I look at it this way. You're talking about a golf course that suits him well, tied third last year. It is not the longest golf course on tour. We saw last year a lot of players who were not necessarily the longest players on tour do really well. Some great putters do well, which is what we talked about heading into the week. And here is Brian Gay, who's notably a great putter and has been for years. And all of a sudden he gets the job done. So I feel like in some regards, we were on the point there where, hey, this is where you don't need great distance. You need great, you're going to need to putt really well in order to win here. And that's exactly what Brian Gay did. So really impressive. And I'm happy for him because you mentioned he's 48 years old. Now you get that 2-year exemption on the PGA Tour and it takes you right straight into the PGA Tour champions. So you can set your own schedule. You can play courses you like, you can play places you think you'll have success, give yourself a chance to win, or you can play the big purse events. He's going to have his, he's going to have his choice in many of those areas, and he's set for a long time now. So when you're at this age, this tweener age, right, 45 to 50, where you're in between PGA Tour and PGA Tour champions, I call it I call it no man's land. You're usually losing a little bit of distance, hard to compete with these young guys coming out, raring and ready to go. And if you're Brian Gay, you've taken care of that that difficult time period in a professional golfer's career. So great to see.
I do want to talk about Brian Gay's career in just a second, because it's pretty remarkable what he's been able to do. But I want to talk a little bit about this Sunday round that he had, because this was the Wyndham Clark show for the vast majority of the day, and especially for the back nine. I think he got out to a 3 or 4 shot lead at one point. He ran into a little bit of trouble, but Brian Gay comes in 31, which is 4 under. And when he made bogey on 17, it's a par 5. I'm thinking, man, this might be over. It might be all she wrote for Brian Gay. He gets a little awkward lie in the rough on 18, and he just hits a beauty to, this is where I would insert shot link number here, but we don't have shot link. So like, I don't know, 3 feet, 2.5 feet, he's able to tap that in. And then Wyndham Clark, unable to make his own birdie on 18, goes to a playoff. Brian Gay, with that magic putter, the weapon that he has, Greg, is able to seal it on the first playoff hole by making birdie. I mean, it was a bit out of nowhere after what I saw him do on 17.
And the putt on 18 in the playoff was just perfect. I mean, it was perfect pace, which you've been putting with all day. It was the perfect line, and it went right in the middle. You couldn't have drawn it up any better. So I think when you get under pressure, you see your strengths shine. Also, your weaknesses can shine through as well. So it was really great to see the putting. I was a little surprised about the three putt on 17, to be honest, but it just had me thinking at that point, well, this is where distance really is an advantage. If you're able to go for that green and two, get it up around the green. I know there's risk. I know there's water left, cuts in a little bit short. I know that throat is really narrow, but if you're able to get it up around that green hole high into the right green side bunkers, even though it's not a great angle, you're not going to leave yourself 50 feet. You're probably not going to three putt. You're looking at making birdie or par. And that's where he was, maybe you could say, deficient. Maybe it was a strategy thing. Maybe it was a distance thing. Whatever it is, that was an error, because you're adding that extra shot, that wedge shot. Now it's another opportunity to make a mistake. And that's exactly what happened. But then he comes through, and it was just his week, because both the shots into 18, and particularly the putt on the 18th green in the playoff, was what impressed me the most.
The 2020 calendar year for Brian Gay hasn't been good. Entering the Bermuda Championship, he missed 14 out of 18 cuts. His world golf ranking was dropping pretty significantly. But in terms of his career as a whole, it's been really impressive. I mean, he turned pro in 1994. I believe he's had his tour card every single year since 1999. You're talking about a guy who has kept his status for basically 20 consecutive years. He's making about $1 million a year. I mean, this is hard to do. Well, we're going to get into a little bit of the more details in a bit about how you can lose your card, how you can obtain your card, how you can keep it year over year. But this is impressive when you see a guy who has played basically 25 or 30 PGA Tour events every single year for 20 years. And now he has what you call, Greg, I mean, and I completely agree with that, ticket to the Champions Tour.
Right. So it's a model for consistency in many ways. And this is different than the consistency we've seen out of like a Matt Kuchar or a Jim Furyk or a Tiger Woods. Of course, it's far different than that, because he does have some miscuts. He will have these years where he misses 8, 9, 10, even 10 cuts in a year. That's probably average. He probably averages around 9 missed cuts in a year, and makes more, you know, makes 15 or more, I would say. So how do you get to the place where you're keeping your card year after year when you're missing that many cuts? And the way you do it is you take advantage of the courses that fit your game. Yep. And I look at the wins that he has. Brian Gay, he has 5 wins on the PGA Tour. And look at the courses there. Mayakoba. Okay, well, just thinking off the top of your head, that's not an overly long golf course. We've had Matt Kuchar win there. We've had Brendan Todd win there last year, who also won here in Bermuda. So you have that kind of parallel where, okay, Mayakoba, not an overly long golf course. Brian Gay gets it done there. The one in Memphis, the Verizon Heritage St. Jude Classic presented by FedEx, not an extremely long course, but that's the one that kind of sticks out to me. That's the more difficult of all of these courses. And then he won the Humana Challenge, as it was called, in 2013. And that's another one where it's not an overly long golf course. You have some winners there that don't necessarily hit it extremely far. It's not a distance priority. That's the one out there in Palm Springs. And now he wins here at Bermuda. So he takes advantage of the courses, of the places that suit him really well. And it's not easy to do that. It's easy to get into an event like this and say, okay, this is my chance. And you put a little too much pressure on yourself to play your way out of it. But every single time he gets into these events where he's got a chance because of the distance, well, he shows his skill in other ways, which is skill with the putting, skill with the wedges, skills around the greens, and skills with short iron play, which are fantastic.
Yeah, he makes his hay. You know, the 5 or 6 tournaments a year in which he knows he has a much better chance than others, he certainly makes his hay there. I want to transition a bit to Wyndham Clark, who is going to finish second. He loses out to Brian Gay in a playoff. And I got to tell you, Greg, as I'm watching this whole thing, develop and unroll throughout the day, he goes out and he's 5 under through his first 7 holes. He's got a multiple shot lead. He's 7 under through 11. I mean, things are rolling right along. long for Wyndham Clark. And then he got kind of stuck in neutral and he plays last six holes at one over just to, you know, get into that playoff. And then he's not able to close it out. You know, what I thought was interesting is Wyndham Clark's a very committed player. He acts very quickly, which I think helps him a lot in situations like this, right? He gets his number, he jumps up there and he, you know, he takes his shot without thinking about it too much. I wonder if he got out of his routine a little bit. I didn't have the stopwatch out by all means, but I just felt like early in the day on Sunday, he was playing fast. He was committed. I thought he slowed down just a hair on his back nine. And that's where we saw the worst of his scores roll in.
Yeah, it can happen, right? There's a moment in every event, and it doesn't have to be on the 18th hole. We think of pressure as something that happens on 18, and it doesn't. It happens at various times for various players throughout a round. And just watch Jordan Spieth, because sometimes for him, there are moments in tournaments where it happens in the first couple of holes. The first three holes, there's that one moment where the whole tournament, the whole scape of the tournament shifts in one way or another. And as you get into the final groups, you've gotten past those moments all the way. And there's a point where, well, you continue to do it and you do it for an entire week. And there's also sometimes a point where you unfortunately don't. Now, to me, Wyndham Clark's strategy, I think of him as more of an aggressive player. Mm. And the way that he played 17 is the disappointment to me. Think about him and Brian Gay. I know they're not in the same group, but the advantage Wyndham Clark has is his distance, right? He's got a huge distance advantage over Brian Gay. I mean, this year so far, he's averaging 324 and a half, or entering the week, 324 and a half. He's sixth on tour in driving distance, and he's laying up on the par five 17th. I know he left himself about 20 feet, and I know he hit a great putt that didn't go in, but that's where you got to be a little more aggressive. You have to take these tournaments. Nobody's going to give them to you. And something that Webb Simpson learned in playoffs, Webb had a horrible playoff record. He was like 1-6 or something. And he lost at the RSM to Tyler Duncan last year. And then he comes back in a playoff against Tony Finau and wins because he said, in his words, he was more aggressive. He didn't wait for anything to happen. He went and took it. And that's what you have to do. And Webb also did that at the RBC Heritage. He went and took it. And we haven't seen that out of Wyndham Clark yet at this point. He's an immensely talented player. Somebody we mentioned on Monday, Rick, about how, hey, Wyndham Clark's a guy you could take a chance on because he has this kind of firepower. Yeah. He's a guy who is a sleeper, hasn't really been playing well, but he has the talent to jump up a leaderboard, to contend and possibly win an event.
And he was coming off a T13 at the Shriners as well, which means he's still playing great right now. I know it'll be disappointing. It'll sting tomorrow. It'll sting for maybe a couple of weeks, but still in really good form. And with a T16 this week, Greg, we can officially get off Will Zalatoris' watch. It's done. It's over. He has now earned enough points to get his PGA Tour special temporary status. He only needed 3 FedEx Cup points. And essentially, after the cut was made and a couple of guys withdrew, all he had to do was finish the weekend. Just cross the finish line, Will, and you'll get your special temporary status. Obviously, we are incredibly high on what he has been doing over the course of the last year or so. I've been on record countless times saying when he's eligible to be the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, he'll be the favorite to be the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. He is the real deal, and now he's going to get unlimited sponsors exemptions for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I presume he'll take advantage of that. I mean, this has been quite a run for an extended period of time on both tours, on the Korn Ferry Tour and on the PGA Tour. And he's just proving to himself week after week that he belongs. He's proving to himself that the performance last year on the Korn Ferry Tour was real. That's who he is. It's what he can do. And he can take that game and it travels. And that's one of the things that I really like about watching Will Zalatoris so far. It's something to watch for with a PGA Tour player when they are able to succeed at different styles, different locations. You talk about, well, twice kind of in the a tropical sea, island kind of a feel, right? Corrales, a T8. And then this week, what was it? T16, I think it ended up. But you also have a US Open where he comes in tied 6. You have a Shriners out in Las Vegas where it's a, a T5. You have some varying difficulties. You have varying styles. You have wind. You have no wind. You have thick rough. You have no rough. You have all these different kinds of styles. And he's able to succeed at all these different levels. And that's a sign that he is a player with a game that really travels. And that's something that's going to bode well for him on the PGA Tour.
What I think is really interesting is how early in the season he's gotten this done. So if you remember like 2 years ago when Doc Redman finished like T2 at Rocket Mortgage and he tried that sprint to get to the finish line, there was only a handful of events to go. Or Will Gordon at the end of last year when he finishes what, T2 or T3 at Travelers, and he's only got a handful of events to go. There's like 40 events left this season. He can take all these sponsors exemptions that he wants, play as much as possible, and really ensure that he gets enough FedEx Cup points, because what he needs to do is he needs to be in the top 125 from last season's list. So he needs 281 FedEx Cup points, which, you know, with how many starts he has left, with how well he's played, you got to imagine that's a piece of cake. That's a layup. But I'm just like so interested that he's got like 40 events left to do it.
Yeah, he's got tons of time. I mean, it's basically it's as if he got his card this year. Right. It's like he played the Corn Ferry Tour last year and got his card. It's turned into that. It's not how it actually happened, but it's turned into that. So he's going to be able to play a lot more events, as you said, Rick. And if this consistent run continues to happen, he's going to have no problem earning his card for the next year. So, which still, regardless of whether he got his card last year or not, he would still have to perform at a certain level. It would just have to be top 125 from this year's points to get him in. So he's in great shape. And even if he's in the 125 to 150 category, you're going to have next fall to kind of earn your way back in, as Wyndham Clark did last year. So he's in a really good place now where he can play a full season on the PGA Tour. He can get his feet wet, very low pressure. I think it's very, very likely that he finishes inside at least the top 150, and it's more likely that he finishes inside the top 125 of last year's points. So I think you're going to see this player earn that PGA Tour card, and I think he's going to keep it for many, many years.
I want to transition this conversation into actually a question that we got from Apple Podcasts. So if you leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, you ask a question, you make a comment, you want to set a topic to be brought up, we'll find a way to work it into the show. So this one is from Be Somebody 4. Thank you for the question. And it's a pretty good question. How bad does a player need to be to lose their tour card? You know, do they get sent to the minors? He's referencing the Corn Ferry Tour. And what does it take for a regular tour player to actually lose it? And then he I love this last line, Greg. Worried for my guy Max Homa. So we can talk about Max specifically, because, you know, Max, he won what, 2019 Wells Fargo. So he would have exemption, I guess, all of this season and next season, right? So you don't have to be too worried about Max. But in general, I think there's a couple of different types of guys and the way that they have their tour card, Greg. So you have the guys that are like inside the top, what, 70 in the world, where I think it's pretty hard to lose your card. You know, you're getting, you're playing all the big time events. You're playing well because you're inside the top 70. You're getting the invites to the WGCs and the match play and all that stuff. And you're just getting into a lot and you have a lot of opportunity. It's when you get outside of that, the 100 to 150, that turnover there to me is much bigger, because you're not getting the free official World Golf Rankings points. You're not getting the free FedEx Cup points. You're not getting all that stuff. You actually have to play well. And if you go on a run, you go on an extended run, you could lose your card pretty easily.
You can. It's not that difficult to lose your card. So just going through, how many points do you actually need to keep your card? So you go back to 2019, because last year was a shortened year, so points are much fewer. And this year we're not really far enough along yet. So Pat Perez in 2019 was 125 at 376 points. So just to give you an idea, that is basically a second place finish,
right?
Which in a normal event gets you 300 points and 76 other points, which the scale for points on in the FedEx Cup, it dramatically falls off.
Super right. Top heavy.
You get down to 70th place. You're making cuts. You're earning 3 points, five points, 7 points. It doesn't really matter if you're finishing tied 46th or tied 68th. It doesn't make that big of a difference when it comes to FedEx Cup points. What you have to be able to do is contend in events. You got to get yourself top 10s. That's how you go ahead and keep your card. So now we talk about this fine line all the time. What's the line between a Korn Ferry Tour player and a PGA Tour player? Well, it's not that great. The line is, at least in, say, the 100 to 125 on the PGA Tour and the guys just outside of that, it's a very, very fine line. So how bad do you have to be? You don't have to be bad at all. You're not finishing in, you're not contending in those handful of events where you're getting that tied third finish. You're getting that T8 finish, because those top 10 finishes give you big jumps. They take out chunks.
Yeah.
And when you can do that, when you have the ability, the talent level to win and get a chunk of FedEx Cup points, that's when it becomes really easy to keep your card, because you can keep it in 2-3 weeks, right?
Yep.
2-3 good weeks in an event where you're playing 25 times for a season, all of a sudden you have your card. So I would say it's not that difficult to lose your card. You don't have to play that badly. And look at Harris English. Finally, one last point on this. Harris English was one, he finished outside the top 150, right? He doesn't get his card through the Korn Ferry Tour playoffs. And now all of a sudden he's one of the best players we have on the PGA Tour week in and week out. So that line is, look, you're not playing great. You're not contending, but you don't have to play that bad to lose your card.
The and this is going to sound stupid to say, but like the real caveat to all this is winning. Like, and that there's a huge difference, not in just FedEx Cup points, but in finishing first and T2 is huge. It's not only the 200, you know, whatever FedEx Cup points, but it's the guarantee of two more seasons of your status. It's these guys who, you know, who haven't won in the last couple of years who can go on a 6 or 8 month downstretch and they can really see themselves fall out of the FedEx Cup standings. And that's an easy way to lose your card. But someone like a Max Homa, to bring it back to the original question, because that's, you know, worried for my guy, Max Homa says, be somebody like, you know, the win helps in such a big way. You see it free up guys, you see it guarantee it for a couple of years. So the caveat here is winning, and finding one of those, it is so massive. Obviously it can't be overstated.
And because it's so difficult, that's why the reward is so rich, right? Not just the dollars that you earn, not just the FedEx Cup points, the 2-year exemption really is huge. For a guy like Brian Gay, all of a sudden you punched your ticket, great line, right into PGA Tour champions. You're going to sail right in there. You're always going to have a place to play. And then for a guy like Max Homa, well, all of a sudden you see a guy in Max Homa who was going back and forth between Korn Ferry Tour and PGA Tour until he wins. And all of a sudden the very next year, which was really, I believe, Rick, it was the start of last year, the form was great. It was, maybe it was 19.
It was, but he had that stretch that ended at like Genesis. So that would have been mid February, where he had like 6 top 20s in a row. He had a couple of top 10s in there. He was playing awesome. He's been a guy who's not been able to get back into form since the shutdown.
Right. You're exactly right. It was in 2020, tied 9th at Farmers, tied 6th at Waste Management, tied 14th at Pebble Beach, tied 5th at Genesis, and then tied 24th at API before the shutdown. It was great. It was great form. So, but what happens is all of a sudden this player in Max Homa wins and there's a release. And it allows him to gather some consistency, to gather some confidence, to play the events you want to play, not the events you have to play. So it really is a big deal. And I think Max will be fine. I think this has been kind of a unique year for everybody. So everybody's going to handle it differently. I'm sure he'll get his game back into form. And he's not a guy that I'm really worried about.
And he's got like 40 events left to go. Long season, lots of time to get back into form. All right, Greg, here's what we're going to do. Quick preview of the Houston Open. We've got to put a bow on some odds and ends like our matchup challenge and our one and done from the Bermuda Championship. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Selling a little? or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And we're back. Houston Open, Greg. Not the Shell Houston Open. The Vivint Open. That's a solar company. See that? Houston Open going for renewables. This is interesting. Not only are we going to get fans, 2,000 fans, I believe, in attendance, but you're going to get the return of Dustin Johnson and Adam Scott for the first time since testing positive for COVID-19. Phil Mickelson trying to work his way into form before Augusta National. I mean, this is the weeks before majors are always so interesting to me because guys treat them differently. They're kind of creatures of habit. And in a year where routine has been thrown completely out of whack, I was very interested to see who was actually going to show up in Houston this year.
Yeah, it's exciting to see Dustin Johnson play. I think it's important for him. I do think that it's an opportunity for him to kind of shake some rust off. So for him to contend in the Masters, where it just demands your game to be at such a high level, and it doesn't take much for DJ to get his game into that form, I think it's really good that he's able to play, and I'm looking forward to that. Adam Scott, too, is a guy I think could really put on a show at Augusta National. He's won before, of course, in 2013. But I think his ball striking is still good enough to compete there, and his putting has been outstanding. So for him to get another rep here too at the Vivint Houston Open is really important. So I'm looking forward to seeing those two guys and what they do. But you're right, Rick. Well, how are you going to handle the week before a major championship? You have spectators being there for most of these players. It'll be their first week experiencing spectators. And does that give you any discomfort when you're out there playing? How are you going to handle that aspect of it? It didn't seem to be a problem in Bermuda at all. I imagine it will be the same here in Houston. So hopefully the players feel like they're at very little risk. But this is another hard one because you're watching because of the COVID tests. Is somebody going to test positive and miss Masters? That's the one thing we're all crossing our fingers and hoping that doesn't happen. So Houston's going to be very interesting for a lot of reasons, a lot more reasons than it would be in a normal year.
You and I will dive deep into this on the Monday DFS preview for the Houston Open, but this is a new course this year. It's Memorial Park Golf Course. It's a Muni, which I love. I love getting public courses out there on the PGA Tour. Also, don't quote me on this.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure it's like downtown or like kind of downtown, right? This is not out in the suburbs. I'm pretty sure it's very close to the center of Houston. I would have to look into that, but that's my understanding of this.
I think you're right. And yeah, it has actually hosted the Houston Open before, back in the 60s, I believe. Right. I was reading about it a while back. I want to say maybe in like 65 or something, it held the Houston Open. So none of the players this week have any experience.
I don't think so.
But yeah, another new course. And it's these are always... Yeah, they're hard to predict, hard to preview. So I'm looking forward to developing some strategies with you tomorrow on how to tack that, how to handle that, how to make some picks.
Also, final thing on this, you know, I'm a huge fan of the tournament logos, the good ones, the bad ones. This is such a good one. So they partner with, there's a big tie into the Houston Astros Golf Foundation. So the logo for the Houston Open looks like the old school Astros logos, which are just like perfect. Like I love that. This is such a good logo, Greg.
You mentioned the Houston Astros Foundation. They saved this. They really saved this event.
Yeah.
Where there was a time where it didn't have a title sponsor, and it was, if it wasn't for the Houston Astros Foundation, this wouldn't be where it is now. And it's really cool to see. So I'm looking forward to it. We got a new venue. We got a title sponsor. All great news. And it's the week before Masters. This is just it's going to be very exciting.
Odds and ends. The matchup belt. So Kyle, unfortunately, went 1-4. The three of us, Rick, Greg, Mark, all went 4-1, but there was a tiebreaker. And Greg, do you know who won the tiebreaker?
I have a guess. Take your victory lap.
Yeah, it was me. So the one that I snuck in was...
Good picking.
Emiliano Grillo was +138 against Brendan Todd. So because I was different, I was on an island there, and that was one of my four victories that got me across the finish line. But when three of us go 4-1 in a week, that's strong, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great picking. It's hard to do, a lot harder than it looks. And so especially in an event like this, where a lot of the players, you may not be quite as familiar. The statistical ranks are a little harder to compare sometimes because for many reasons, we don't have to get into that, but these weeks can appear to be tougher to predict. And when you have kind of some good results like that, it's great. And I think we had some other really good bets too. I think so. We had some really nice bets played.
Yeah, our bets. You had a group winner, I believe, with Stuart Sink, which a 1 out of 5 group winner usually plays. Yep. Pays somewhere. I forget what it was, between +350 and +450. Yeah, we were, our DFS guys were like with Doc and Denny, and like we were all over the top of the leaderboard. Yeah. For the vast majority of this week, for sure.
Yeah, and pretty Sink good. Sink was huge too. Right. Because yeah. I had him as my top 10 guy. I had him all over the board there. And one and done's did pretty well, too. So, yeah, this is a fun week. It's fun to look at that leaderboards. Hey, I told you. See, I knew it.
I love to be able to take the victory lap. So one and done. Kyle had HV3 who missed the cut. So that's good for the rest of us because he's still in the lead, but we were able to make up a little bit of ground. He's at 1.6 million. I, along with Mark, had Will Zalatoris. So we got 61,000. So that moves me to 1.5. I'm in second. It moves Mark to 1.2. He's in third. But the big movers of the week, producer Jacob and you, Greg, both had Denny McCarthy. That got you 160,000. So you guys are still in fourth and fifth, but closing the gap this week with a nice Denny McCarthy pick.
Yeah. So a couple things on Denny. One, he's been playing great and it feels like he's kind of been ready to pop.
Yep.
Yet at the same time, I don't feel like I'm losing out too much going with a Denny McCarthy. So I feel like this is kind of a double dipper. It's like you get a T4 finish out of a player who you're not too worried about using later on. It's not like you're saving him for a major or anything. So yeah, I'm extremely happy with the way that he played. So yeah, kudos to you, Denny. Great playing. Thanks for helping us out. Jacob and I needed it.
Yeah. Speaking of Denny McCarthy, you know how we've been tracking since the 3M Open his ball striking and how much better it's gotten, and we've been waiting for him to pop and finish, and he's been playing great. Actually, I don't have it in front of me, but I got a little inside info this week from a source that I trust. I don't know if he wants to be named, but Denny's working with a new swing coach. So this is I love it, Greg, when the results and this like the eye test, the stuff, the anecdotal stuff matches up with the stats stuff. And we saw it and something's going on there. And like, I absolutely love that. So good on Denny. He's swinging it well. And he's always going to putt it like a madman.
Yeah, that's great to see. It almost worries me a little bit. It makes me feel like I may have lost an important piece of ammunition down the stretch. But look, a T4 in a one and done league, you're trying to get the best out of every pick you have. If you're going to take a Denny McCarthy, you want to take him the week that's going to be his very best week. You're going to take Xander Schauffele, you want to take him the week that's going to be his very best week. So to get a T4 out of Denny McCarthy, I feel like for Jacob and I is definitely a win.
Very much so. Yeah, that might be his best finish for a while. So good on you guys. All right. I think that'll do it. Bermuda Championship. We'll be back Monday. Greg and I will break down the Houston Open. We'll be rocking and rolling next week, and we are sprinting to Augusta, baby. It is coming. So, Greg Ducharme, thank you very much for joining me, as you always do. You can find Greg on Twitter at TheRealGFD. Producer Jacob behind the glass doing all the great work as usual. You can find me at Rick Rungood, and this has been The First Cut. And we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.